issues. But yes, enjoy the forest, try to get out and appreciate them, and push back on logging bills.
Well, thanks very much for joining us, Brad. It's been really good talking to you. I've been wanting to do it for years, so I'm glad we did it this morning.
Yeah, thank you, Barbara. I really appreciate it. You do a fantastic job. I enjoy the show.
Thank you. Well, we'll be talking this morning with Brett Vandenhoevel, who is Columbia River Keepers Executive Director. And you've been listening to Locust Focus here on KBOO Community Radio. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locustfocus. Next week, we talk with Richard Heimberg about going 100% renewable. My engineer is Patsy Kohlberg. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with a little smidge of music by Milton Nascimento, the Miracle of the Fishes. I'm Barbara Bernstein. Thanks for listening.
Eu vejo esses peixes se vou de coração. Eu vejo essas matas e vou de coração. A natureza.
Good morning. You are tuned to KBOO Portland, and it is just 11 o'clock. In case you've been calling and wondering why we're not answering our phones today, it's because KBOO is closed in honor of Indigenous Peoples Day. Coming up on The Boo at 11:30 on Radio Zine, we'll hear excerpts from a powerful new film featuring the words of the legendary civil rights leader, Fannie Lou Hamer. And now, stay tuned for Health Watch. Dr. Michael Greger examines the top 15 causes of premature death in America in his book, How Not to Die: Discover the Foods Scientifically Proven to Prevent and Reverse Disease.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Stand Together Under One Roof on Saturday, October 14th, Rose City Park Presbyterian Church in Portland. Stand Together Under One Roof brings together multiple groups that work for social, racial, and environmental justice to share their purpose, projects, and stories. The day will include short sessions from a variety of groups, a panel, organizational tabling, discussions, networking, and music. Again, that's Stand Together Under One Roof on Saturday, October 14th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Rose City Park Presbyterian Church, 1907 Northeast 45th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The purpose of this program is not to prescribe a treatment to individuals. Listeners should consult their healthcare practitioner before attempting any treatment.
Good morning and welcome to Health Watch. I'm Dr. David Naiman, your host. Today's guest is Dr. Michael Greger. Dr. Greger is a physician, author, and internationally recognized speaker on nutrition and public health. He runs the website nutritionfacts.org, a nonprofit, science-based public service providing daily videos and articles on the latest nutrition research. And he also serves as a director of public health and animal agriculture at the Humane Society of the United States. Dr. Greger is here today to talk about his New York Times bestselling book, How Not to Die, where he discusses 15 of the leading causes of premature death, which foods to eat or avoid, and which lifestyle changes to make to prevent these conditions and live longer. Welcome to Health Watch, Dr. Michael Greger.
So happy to be here.
Well, let's start with how you open the book, How Not to Die. You talk about the story of your grandmother, who was sent home to die at 65 years old. Tell us what you discovered and how that changed your life.
Yeah, I was just a kid when the doctor sent my grandma home in a wheelchair to die. She was diagnosed with end-stage heart disease. She already did so many bypass operations. At some point, you just gets so scarred up inside, there's nothing more you can do. So confined to a wheelchair, crushing chest pain, her life was over at age 65. But then she heard about this guy, Nathan Perdikin, one of our early lifestyle medicine pioneers, and became one of his early success stories. She's actually featured in Pritikin's biography. It talks about Frances Greger, my grandmother. They wheeled her in, and she walked out. Within a few weeks, she was walking 10 miles a day, went on to live another 31 years till age 96. to enjoy her 6 grandkids, including me. And so that's why I went to medical school, and that's why the reason I practice the type of medicine I practice today, lifestyle medicine.
So you say in How Not to Die that our diet is the number one cause of premature death and disability, and yet only 25% of medical schools offer even one course in nutrition. And you also cite a study that found that doctors didn't know more basic nutrition than random people interviewed on the street, and that 80% of graduating doctors are inadequately trained to counsel patients in diet, or feel that they're inadequately trained, I'm sorry. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts on why there's this sense of recalcitrance around engaging with diet as part of a treatment or prevention of disease within conventional medicine.
Yeah, so according to the Global Burden of Disease Study, this is the largest study on human risk factors for disease and disability and death in human history, funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, involving about 500 researchers at dozens of institutions around the world. They have got together and determined that the number one cause of death in the United States is the American diet. The number one cause of disability in terms of the number of years of healthy life lost was our diet. Cigarettes have now, kind of tobacco got bumped to number 2. Cigarettes now only kill about 500,000 Americans every year, whereas our diet kills hundreds of thousands or more. Most deaths in the United States are preventable, related to nutrition. Then obviously, nutrition is the number one thing taught in medical school, right? I mean, obviously, it's the number one thing your doctor talks to you about at every single visit, right? So how could there be this disconnect between the science and the practice of medicine? Well, you know, doctors have a severe nutrition deficiency in education. Most doctors were just never taught about the impact health and nutrition can have on the course of illness. And so they graduate without this powerful tool in their medical toolbox. There's also institutional barriers such as time constraints, lack of reimbursement. In general, doctors simply aren't paid for counseling people on how to take better care of themselves. Of course, the drug companies also play a role in influencing medical education and practice. You know, you can ask your doctor when's the last time they were taken out to dinner by Big Broccoli. It's probably been a while.
So you talk about the bill that was introduced in the California legislature that would require medical doctors to have 12 hours of nutrition training. Can you talk about why you think the California Medical Association came out and campaigned against this bill that would have required 12 hours of nutrition training and I think ended up defeating it?
In fact, 7 hours over years. It wasn't even 7 hours a year. And indeed, it went down the feet. And so with that, suggests it's not just ignorance, that there's actually this active, actively working against incorporating more nutrition into postgraduate medical education. The California Medical Association, even the American, even the Family Physicians Group came out against it, the Surgeons Group, all the mainstream medical groups with the exception of the Lifestyle Medicine Group, came out opposed. And these are public meetings, and so it's actually videotaped. And so I have some clips on Nutrition Facts actually describes, I mean, how could the California Medical Association with a straight face get up and say, you know, doctors don't need more information on nutrition? And it's just unbelievable. I mean, it would be so funny if it wasn't so sad. It's still funny. And so that's the representative from the California Medical Association sitting there addressing the legislator saying, you know what, we don't need, you know, we doctors don't need more medical education. Look, you pick up a can of Coke, there it is, all the nutrition facts right on the label. Like, what do we need? You know, it was just unbelievable, which again really states maybe really fundamental ignorance as to the role healthy eating and living plays. Basically, I think it's like smoking in the 50s. I mean, back in the 50s, we had already had decades of science linking smoking with lung cancer. But it was ignored because smoking was normal. Most doctors smoked. The average per capita cigarette consumption, 4,000 cigarettes a year. I mean, the average person walking around smoked a half pack a day on average. The American Medical Association was reassuring that everyone that, you know, smoking in moderation was A-okay. So there was this disconnect between what the science was saying and public policy.
So the first part of your book, Dr. Greger, are How Not to Die chapters. We have How Not to Die from Heart Disease, How Not to Die from Digestive Cancers, How Not to Die from Suicidal Depression, from Prostate Cancer, from Brain Diseases. And obviously, we can't go through all of them today, but I was hoping we could go through one of them today as sort of an example of what you provide in the book, How Not to Die. So if we took high blood pressure as an example, the number one risk factor for death in the world is high blood pressure. And a lot of people don't know that it increases our risk not just for cardiovascular disease, but also for kidney failure and for aneurysms. Can you talk a little bit about how you would walk us through a How Not to Die program for high blood pressure?
Yeah, so 78 million Americans affected. That's about one in three adults. And as we age, our pressures get higher and higher, such that by age 60, most of us, the majority, 65% of Americans over age 60 have high blood pressure. If you say, wait a second, if most of us have hypertension when we get older, maybe it's less a disease and more just kind of a natural, inevitable consequence of aging. Well, no. We've known since the 1920s that high blood pressure need not occur. So there are populations, for example, rural Africa, rural China, where the pressures don't go up as people age, stay at about 110 over 70 their entire lives, and which is probably the ideal blood pressure, the no benefit from reducing it further blood pressure. What they shared in common, these are vastly different diets, but they were eating no salt added plant-based diets with meat only eaten on special occasions. And you say, well, why do we think it's the plant-based nature of their diets that is so protective? Because in the Western world, the only population that is found to have those kind of pressures on average were people eating strictly plant-based diets. This group of strict vegetarians in Boston, where Frank Sachs at Harvard first did original studies back decades ago. And so that suggests, oh, well, there's a kind of a dietary approach. And so you say, well, wait a second. So does the American Heart Association come out and tell people to eat a meat-free diet, kind of a no-meat diet? No, they recommend a low-meat diet, so-called DASH diet. You say, wait a second. I mean, when the DASH diet was being created, were they just not aware of that landmark research done at Harvard by Dr. Sachs? No, they were aware. In fact, the chair of the design committee that came up with the DASH diet was Dr. Sachs. And they're very explicit in their publications at the time, saying that what they did was the motivation for the DASH diet was to capture the blood pressure and lowering benefits of a plant-based diet, but include enough animal products to make it palatable to the general population. They didn't think the public could handle the truth. And you can see what they were thinking. I mean, look, just like drugs never work unless you actually take them. You know, diets never work at all unless you actually eat them. So, like, you know, look, how many people are going to go strictly plant-based? So if we kind of soft-pedal the message, come up with some kind of compromise diet, well, then on a population scale, maybe we'll do more good. Okay, but, I mean, tell that to the 1,000 American families a day that lose a loved one to high blood pressure. Maybe it's time to start telling the American public the truth.
We have this interesting section in the high blood pressure section about whole grains, where you say that there's the same benefit from adding whole grains into the diet as blood pressure medications in terms of lowering risk of strokes and heart attack. But you also talk about how refined grains actually increase our risk of strokes and heart attacks. And given how much confusing marketing there is around what a whole grain is, what is a whole grain, and what would be the reasons to seek out whole grains, and then how would you sort of parse out the going to the store and making sure you're not getting a refined grain by accident?
Yeah, that's a great question. So whole grains, kind of the standard is, you know, brown rice, whole wheat. But if you pick up a loaf of bread, you know, they love, it'll say has whole grains. In fact, you pick up some sugary day glow marshmallow cereal, it'll likely say whole grains on the cover, because they realize that's such an important marketing ploy, because we know how healthy they are for us. But you really have to look at the list of ingredients. You got to turn around, look at the back where they don't want you to be looking, and make sure that the first ingredient is 100% WHOLE. Actually, it's a legal definition. And so 100% whole rye, 100% whole oats, 100% whole wheat, 100% whatever. But you want to make sure that's the first ingredient, and that will tell you, well, at least the majority of the grains in the product are whole, even if the second is then, you know, something like durum wheat, which is just their sneaky way of saying white flour. So white flour is refined. Whole wheat is not. White pasta is refined. Whole wheat pasta is not. Now, there's a variety of, bean-based pastas, like chickpea pasta and kidney bean pasta and all sorts of other things that often combine whole grains and legumes, which would be a great addition to one's diet. Oatmeal is a whole grain. Even instant oatmeal, which is basically just kind of whole oats, but just finely chopped almost into a powder, just so it cooks quicker, but it's not like it has anything taken out of it. And so that's what we're looking for. Nothing bad added, nothing good taken away. Quinoa, so-called pseudo-grain, another excellent choice, millet. In fact, if you go to kind of a good natural health food store and go in the bulk section, you will be, you know, you'll see dozens of different whole grains you may never have even heard of. I encourage people to experiment around and find one that they can enjoy on a daily basis.
In case you just tuned in, you're listening to Health Watch, and we're talking today to Dr. Michael Greger about his book, How Not to Die. So to continue in the chapter around high blood pressure, you pick out some specific foods that you think are particularly good, and one are what you call nitrate-rich vegetables. So what are nitrate-rich vegetables, and why would we, if we are worried about blood pressure, want to eat them?
And so, of course, we should all be worried about high blood pressure, because, again, most of us will become hypertensive, have high blood pressure by age 60. And just like berries are the healthiest fruits, greens, dark green leafy vegetables, are the healthiest vegetables. In fact, probably the healthiest foods, period, with a higher nutrient density than any other food. So, for example, every daily serving of greens is associated with about a 20% drop in heart attack and stroke risk for each daily serving, and one of the reasons, so there's a variety of wonderful healthy things in there, but nitrates, which found particularly in dark green leafy vegetables, as well as beetroot, arugula probably has the highest per gram level, is that these nitrates allow our body to more efficiently use oxygen. And so you hear a lot about, like, beet juice, the athletes using beet juice to improve their performance. And there's also, and this is done in cycling trials and 5K runs and breath-holding deep dives and all sorts of just a fascinating literature on improving athletic performance by eating not just beets and not just beet juice, but whole beets, the spinach. There was a study on frozen spinach that found the same amazing results. But as a physician, I'm less interested in young, healthy people, you know, getting a little edge on a 5K, and more interested in people that really need that improved blood flow, improved oxygen utilization, like people with COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, like emphysema, or people with peripheral vascular disease or heart disease, and indeed, or high blood pressure. And indeed, you do see the same kind of beneficial effects in terms of allowing a person's arteries to better relax normally, to dilate in response to blood flow. Something that is impaired, relatively impaired in people with high blood pressure, tend to have kind of stiffened, inflamed arterial trees. And so people with, particularly people with heart disease, or people at risk for heart disease, which is everyone, since it's the number one killer of men and women, we need to eat dark green leafy vegetables every single day. In fact, that's one of my daily dozen, which is kind of my daily recommendation for all the healthiest foods, I encourage people to try to fit into their daily routine.
Well, speaking of the daily dozen, the second part of the book, if we move out of the part of the book that is disease specific, you try to give the answer to the question of what a day's eating would look like for someone day in and day out. So tell us about the daily dozen checklist.
Yeah, so, I mean, I did want it to be kind of a reference book with the 1,000 citations, et cetera, but I also wanted it to be kind of a practical guide on translating this mountain of data into day-to-day decisions. So that's what became the second half of the book, where I kind of center my recommendations around this daily dozen checklist of all the things I encourage people to fit into their daily routine, like legumes every day, beans, split peas, chickpeas, and lentils, berries, the healthiest fruits, greens, the healthiest vegetables, specifically cruciferous vegetables. A tablespoon of ground flax seeds, a quarter teaspoon of turmeric. I talk about the best beverages, how much exercise to get every day, the best sweeteners. Just kind of go through the list and, again, just trying to inspire people to try to remember to fit some of the healthiest foods into their daily diet as much as I can.
And when we look back at the blood pressure section, you do mention things like flax seeds, which are in the daily dozen, and also hibiscus tea, which isn't, but is specific to blood pressure. Can you talk a little bit about those and what they're doing?
Sure. Randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trials have shown that the consumption of a few spoonfuls of ground flax seeds a day can bring down blood pressure 2 to 3 times better than some of our leading blood pressure medications, and only have good side effects, reducing our risk of breast and prostate cancer, controlling cholesterol, triglycerides, blood sugars, reducing inflammation, curing constipation. Recommend a tablespoon of ground flax seeds every day. Hibiscus tea is actually part of my daily dozen. It's part of the beverages section. My three favorite beverages is water, and then green tea or white tea, and then an herbal tea called hibiscus. It was tested head-to-head against the leading blood pressure drug. 2 cups of strong hibiscus tea every morning, so that was actually, if I remember, 5 tea bags worth to make 2 cups of tea. So every morning was as effective as the drug, again, without side effects. I mean, they don't call it sour tea for nothing. There's another name you'll hear it by. So I encourage people to rinse their mouth out with water after drinking it, so the natural acids in the tea just don't hurt your enamel. And the only caveat with green tea is that if you like to eat the tea, like use matcha tea, powdered green tea, or if you throw tea leaves in a smoothie or something, I'd recommend sticking to Japanese tea, as high levels of lead have been found in tea imported from China.
And tell us a little bit about the traffic light system that you use to help people with decision-making around their daily choices.
Yeah, so that's kind of the other tool that I encourage people to use, which is splitting foods into green light foods, yellow light foods, and red light foods. And so green light foods, the foods I encourage people to maximize in their diet, are whole plant foods. And so fruits, vegetables, legumes, beans, split peas, chickpeas, lentils, whole grains, nuts and seeds, mushrooms, herbs, and spices, basically real food that grows out of the ground. These are our healthiest choices. And then yellow light foods, which I encourage people to minimize in their diet, are processed foods and animal foods. So I encourage people to minimize their intake of meat, eggs, dairy, and processed junk. And then red light foods ideally are avoided on a day-to-day basis. Again, it doesn't really matter what you eat on a holiday or birthday or special occasion or something, but on a day-to-day basis, I really do encourage people to avoid the red light foods, which are processed meats. What are called ultra-processed plant foods, which are basically junk foods like soda and cotton candy, that kind of thing.
So you have one section in the book called How Not to Die from Iatrogenic Causes, and I think a lot of our listeners won't know what that means. I was hoping you could orient us to iatrogenic causes, and also what are some of the things that you might touch upon in that section?
Yeah, so that's, I mean, it's kind of like death by doctor. So actually, our healthcare system, for example, adverse drug reactions. So, you know, when people think of side effects from drugs, I'm talking about a little rash here or something. Our best estimates are prescription drugs kill 106,000 Americans every year. And these are adverse drug reactions. These are not like medical mix-ups, like they took the wrong drug or overdoses. This is just side effects from drugs taken as prescribed, killing off more than 100,000 Americans every year. If you do the math, that means that the 6th leading cause of death is doctors. Like, the sixth leading cause of death in the United States is us. And that's why it's critical to you know, stay. And I'm not telling people to avoid doctors. I'm telling people to stay healthy so that you don't need these kind of medical procedures that do carry significant risk. Oftentimes, the benefits do outweigh the risk, but with significant risk, best to avoid completely. And we do that by eating and living healthy. And it's never too early, never too late to start trying to clean up our lives.
And can you speak a little bit to the subsection of the iatrogenic causes where you talk about aspirin and salicylic acid and how actually salicylic acid is found in a lot of the healthy foods you're recommending and why that's relevant?
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting. So, you know, aspirin, I mean, I think people may or may not know that, you know, aspirin came from willow tree bark. But it's actually aspirin, or the prodrug, the what's turned into aspirin in our bodies, or what aspirin turns into in our bodies, the salicylic acid is actually found widely throughout the plant kingdom. It's like vitamin C, which is, you know, basically found throughout plant food, some more than others. We know that in certain circumstances, like if one's had a heart attack, a low-dose aspirin may help by thinning the blood in terms of preventing a second heart attack, so-called secondary prevention. And in certain other circumstances, it may be beneficial. Unfortunately, there are significant side effects, which is kind of gastrointestinal upset. So people with something like some inflammatory arthritis or something who are taking large doses of these anti-inflammatory drugs, the aspirin family drugs, can suffer damage to their stomach lining, to their intestinal lining, which can, in very serious, rare cases, lead to even death from bleeding in the digestive tract, uncontrollable bleeding. So that's why, even though there are benefits to the drug aspirin in certain circumstances, we don't recommend everybody take it because of the downsides, because of the risks. Whereas we may be able to get similar benefits by getting salicylic acid in kind of the place, getting aspirin the way nature intended, that is, in these foods. And I talk about some of the spices like cumin, which are packed with salicylic acid, such that if you eat a really spicy kind of Indian meal, it's like taking a baby aspirin in terms of the levels of aspirin in your blood after doing it. You can find aspirin in people's bloodstream, even in people that don't take aspirin, if they're eating lots of healthy foods. And these are the same foods that are associated with lower risk of some of the same kind of adverse effects in terms of the peptic ulcers and things like that. So it seems we may be able to kind of get the benefits without the risk, kind of benefits with benefits, by getting our nutrients in as in kind of food as grown. And this goes for kind of most of our nutrients, rather than getting our vitamins and minerals in the the supplement aisle. It's better to get them with two exceptions in the produce aisle.
So, Dr. Greger, if people listening today, if their interest is piqued, is your website nutritionfacts.org the place you would point people to find out more, or is there somewhere else you would recommend if they want to know more about the book and your philosophical approach?
That would be the way. I wouldn't call it philosophical.
Scientific.
Evidence-based, right? It's not. That's the problem with nutrition, is that it's belief or opinion-based. Right,
good
as
point.
As opposed to, let's just look at the science. Nutritionfacts.org, there are no ads, no corporate sponsorships, strictly non-commercial, not selling anything, just put it up as a public service. But I do have a cookbook coming out in December, the How Not to Die cookbook I'm really excited about, and all proceeds I get from How Not to Die, from the cookbook, from all my books, from all my speaking engagements, everything all goes to charity. I just want people to eat and live healthier like my grandma.
Well, it was great having you on Health Watch today.
Happy to be here.
We are talking today to Dr. Michael Greger, the author of How Not to Die. You've been listening to Health Watch. I'm Dr. David Naiman, your host. Stay tuned for the rest of the Monday morning radio zine.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Indira Valley, Salo, and DJ Mami Miami, and a benefit for Pueblo Unido PDX on October 13th at Siderite in Portland.
The benefit for Pueblo Unido PDX is a night of music and community as we come together to raise funds for the work of this grassroots organization in East Multnomah County. Pueblo Unido's mission is to empower and provide resources to Latinos with vulnerable immigration status. Again, that's Indira Valley, Salo, and DJ Mami Miami, and a benefit for Pueblo Unido PDX, Friday, October 13th, 7:30 p.m. to 11 p.m. at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Cooch Street, Portland, Oregon, 97232. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Be impeached when they are not really dealing with the people. My soul is tired, white folks, of what you are doing to us. If this society of yours is a great society, God knows I would hate to live in a bad one.
We are sick and tired of being sick and tired. And we are tired of people saying that we are satisfied, because we are everything but satisfied.
Who is that woman? Is she speaking 50 years ago or today? I'm Anita Johnson, and that's the voice of civil rights leader Fannie Lou Hamer.
Keep your land trimmed and a-burning. Keep your land trimmed and a-burning.
Mrs. Hamer would have turned 100 years old on October 6, 2017. Today on Making Contact, you'll hear archival recordings and excerpts from a powerful new documentary featuring Fannie Lou Hamer's contemporaries, themselves now elders. But first, you'll hear about the context of her life and the lives of other sharecroppers in Mississippi 60 years ago. Dream Deferred was an outreach film made in 1964 by Harvey Richards, together with members of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. SNCC's Amzie Moore introduces the sharecroppers and their situation.
I wonder about 150,000 people in the 18 Delta counties. I just keep wondering how they're going to eat and what they're going to wear, because they have no money, they have no food, and they have no clothes.